Welcome back to Alternative Realities. I'm David Kelly, Chief Global Strategist here at JP Morgan Asset Management. A key component of alternative assets is providing diversification and protection during periods of rising inflation and increased volatility, helping investors withstand shocks to public markets within their portfolios. One under-the-radar asset class that can provide these diversification benefits while remaining uncorrelated with stocks and bonds is timber. Joining me today to talk about using timber as an investable asset class and some of the opportunities and threats within the industry is Angela Davis, president of Campbell Global, a subsidiary of JP Morgan Asset Management. So Angela, thank you so much for joining us here on Alternative Realities.
Well, thank you for having me. It's my pleasure.
So I guess to start with, can you give our listeners some idea of your background and your role at Campbell Global today?
Sure. I've been with Campbell Global going on 25 years. I oversee the portfolio management function, investment specialist team, a host of others. Formerly, before Campbell Global, I was with the investment division of Oregon PERS, where I was assistant director of investments and gained some exposure to a variety of asset classes, and including timberland and forestry.
Well, interesting. And so thinking about, it's an unusual, I mean, that's what alternative reality is all about. It's about unusual asset class. And I sort of think of timber as a slightly unusual asset class. But can you talk about, you know, why an investor would want to add timber or wood to their portfolios, and what benefits can that provide as an asset class?
Well, there's four primary benefits: inflation hedge, portfolio diversifier. You have a yield component, and investors always like cash, and carbon sequestration. So it's important though, as we think about this asset class, it's a long-term investment horizon. You should be thinking of a hold of 10 to 15 years. And those investment characteristics that I mentioned are also over that longer hold period. The life cycle of timber forestry is actually perpetual. Once I harvest, and we'll talk about the operations of a forest, but once I harvest and create some yield, I immediately replant that and I start the growing cycle all over again. So we do have some investors who are in this for the very long term and really into a perpetual hold. But if we go to those four attributes, inflation hedge, amongst the major asset classes, timberland has one of the highest correlations to inflation. Portfolio diversification, on the flip side, low correlations to stocks, fixed income. But even within a real assets portfolio, it's interesting, and investors find this interesting, it can be a diversifier. So we see negative correlations to real estate, and we have some of our investors who put timberland in their real estate portfolio and really like that uncorrelated nature of the two assets. Everybody likes cash, and yield, we send back dividends or distributions on a quarterly basis, and it can be up to half of the total return that you get from this asset class. And then last, just carbon sequestration, which ultimately you can create another yield stream from that. But as trees grow, they naturally sequester carbon. The carbon, the CO2 is stored in the tree biomass, and it lasts for decades, if not centuries. Once I harvest a tree, that carbon that's been stored, it's not emitted into the environment. It stays in that tree, in that log. And if I then convert that to lumber, it stays in that product for as long as let's say you put it in a house, for as long as that house is standing. Maybe I put it in a deck, in a fence. So it has a long-lived carbon life cycle, which is very important as we talk about a decarbonization strategy as well.
And I didn't include this in the list of questions, but I'm actually really interested. Obviously, Campbell Global owns forests. But where are these forests, and what sort of trees do you actually grow there? How long do these trees, you know, what's the life cycle of these trees?
Yep. So we have about 1.5 million right now acres under management, and those forests are in what we refer to as the core regions around the world. And they're core regions because either they're a major supplier of wood products and there's a major demand region in that core area. So North America, we're the largest consumer and producer of wood products in the world, and specifically the United States. Then we move to Australia and New Zealand, very large forest markets there, and timberland markets. Both markets build their homes out of wood. And New Zealand, though it's a quite small country, it's the largest exporter to Asia, primarily China. So we see, you know, there's the demand coming out of there. And then last but not least, Latin America is a major forest growing region. We focus on OECD countries. So we focus on Chile relative to Latin America. That is where our global footprint today is. And that is, you know, strategically where we're looking to acquire additional assets as well.
And I suppose it's relatively expensive to transport lumber relative to the cost of the lumber itself. So that's why it's nice to have that global footprint. So you've got with New Zealand, you're a big exporter, but in North America, you can actually have the trees relatively close to where they're ultimately going to be used.
That's right. So the logs don't travel very far. Let's say in the U.S., you're 50 to 100 miles. You'll put a log on a truck and it'll ultimately go to a mill where it's converted to lumber. Lumber actually travels much farther, but the logs, you're right, they don't. They stay relatively close to home.
So lumber has a passport, but logs don't.
Yes. Good way to put it.
Interesting. So, you know, I think that the carbon sequestration is really interesting because, you know, obviously the data still show that there is a growth, you know, there's almost an exponential increase in global surface temperatures, you know, just because the political mood in terms of, global warming has changed. It doesn't change what Al Gore would have called the inconvenient truth of the fact that global climate change is occurring and accelerating. But the political environment has changed, and that has suggest, you know, there has been a that has had some impact on how ESG related assets are viewed in the market. So does that extend to your business, and are you seeing less excitement about timber and wood because of this?
The answer to your question is no. So we have not seen less excitement around timber or wood. And I think if you stand back and you look at the asset class, timber, wood, lumber, they are a sustainable, climate-friendly product without having to jump through any hoops. That is what they are naturally. We don't have to make it an ESG product, but people care about clean air, clean water, sustainable products, and forests do provide that. Whether ESG is in favor, out of favor, also on the demand side, we operate in markets where we build our homes out of wood, and we have for centuries. The U.S. builds its homes out of wood. I talked about Australia, New Zealand. China uses wood primarily for concrete forms for their construction. But so the wood usage won't change in these markets, and we see increasing demand, and that's primarily around more economic issues, being underbuilt housing, being demand for tall wood buildings. So for other reasons that aren't ESG related per se.
And so with the new administration, there are sort of two big question marks that I think come up. One is around environmental regulations, which may affect the harvesting of wood or and these forests. But then also tariffs, can Are tariffs interrupting your business? Are they having a negative impact, or could they have a negative impact?
Tariffs are both a tailwind and a headwind. So tariffs, specifically Canadian tariffs on logs and lumber, they ship both into the US. About 30% of our consumption comes from Canada. So with those tariffs on Canadian logs and lumber, that means higher prices. That means we should get a higher price for our domestic logs, and ultimately the mills will be able to sell lumber at a higher price. So at least for the short to midterm, that certainly would be a tailwind for this asset class. On the flip side, China has decided to ban all US log imports going into China. It's not a huge part of our production. We talked about, logs don't travel that far, but we do export some logs to China, particularly off the West Coast. So either on a regional or an asset basis, that certainly could be a tailwind during this log export ban. Importantly for our firm, we've been in business for over 40 years. We have a team of PhD forest economists, and this is what they do day in and day out. They look at macro level events, they assess those events, and at the end, they bring it down to an asset or a regional level as to what that could mean for the pricing of our product. On the regulatory side, it's interesting. There was an executive order a couple weeks ago that came out from the president looking into opening up national forests for more wood production. So not more regulations saying that we can't operate on private forests, but that would ultimately mean more supply coming into the market if that occurred. We don't see that as a likely outcome. Federal forests are under or not managed. They're not roaded. There's no manufacturing facilities nearby. There's no contractors or staffing to undertake the effort. But it could mean a positive outcome relative to creating a healthier national forest. And that would reduce overall fire risk for both our national and state forests and private lands as well.
That's really interesting. So on the one hand, from a competition perspective, you know, like a lot of other industries, if you see a change in, from this administration, which might be reversed by the next administration, you know, do you want to put all the investment into, say, logging from a national forest if you think that the next administration is going to ban logging from federal forests, so all that money is wasted? So that's one consideration. But also, yeah, I was going to ask you about forest fires, because we've always seen the horrible forest fires we saw around Los Angeles in January. But generally, we've seen a lot of very bad summers where we've had very bad forest fires in the West, in the United States. And you know, how concerned are you about this, and what do you think the outlook there is?
Well, absolutely. It is an issue, and it's an issue that we watch and that we also manage. So number one, a healthy forest is a resilient forest. When you see these forest fires, the catastrophic fires that are typically on the nightly news, these are state and federal lands, again, that are unmanaged, that have a vast amount of dead and dying trees, debris on the ground, which creates a kindling or fuel mm-hmm. for the fire. You have no roads, so they can't get in and put it out. Often it's a let it burn until it starts getting into, whether it's threatening homes or other commercial buildings. That's when they'll start the firefighting efforts. Private timberland owners and private timberland is managed much differently. We're well-roaded. We don't leave dead or dying trees or debris on the ground. We have a healthy forest. And just think about if you have a green tree that it has a fire underneath it, it's not going to burn at a rate or an intensity that a dead tree is. So it's always hard to start a fire with green wood. We always look for something that's quite dried out. So forests are resilient to fires, and it's nature's way of kind of clearing out the underbrush if you have a healthy forest. We also have firefighters ready to go if there is a fire in the area. We have equipment.
Channel.
How we protect ourselves against those events. We also have climatic forecasting tools that we use in our acquisition analysis. So they look at over the next 50 years, what is your risk of increased forest fire? And or in the US South, for example, it's not fires we worry about, it's more rain. It's more, you know, really heavy rainfall activity, which won't, it doesn't mean it's going to devastate your forest. What that means is you can't operate during those times. So you have to wait for it to dry out. So we're looking at those climatic events, which can affect the operability or the overall health of your forest. Drought is another. Forests can withstand drought, but they do, you know, it will affect their growth rates. So we're looking at that and we assess that, and we will exclude those at a very extreme risk.
Interesting. I mean, I never really thought about the extent to which, you know, you sort of think about forest fires as almost being an act of God or alternative, you know, but there actually are things that you can do to mitigate the risk of forest fires. I mean, you know, I presume you think carefully about power lines going through your forest and about, you know, hikers deciding to light campfires in the middle of your private forest and so forth. So you can actually reduce that risk.
Absolutely.
Interesting. Okay. So just to wrap it up. So I think this is a fascinating asset class and really, really very different alternative. I mean, that's what alternative reality is all about. But how do you see the future of the timber industry from here?
Well, we're very bullish. Does that surprise you, David? But we're bullish for real reasons. There's a shrinking land base for forest assets. We know where the supply is. So supply is really the easier part of the equation. It's demand that is more of the focus of the economic team. But there's increasing demand for sustainable building products. We have an underbuilt housing market in many of the core regions around the world and pent up demand for more homes. We have an affordability problem, but that's really not because of the cost of lumber. It's more about the cost of labor relative to homes. But we see this pent up demand. And then there's really fascinating and encouraging technological innovations for commercial construction. So we see increasing desire and demand for what we refer to as tall wood buildings. So buildings in the US up to 18 stories can be built with wood. And those buildings are not only healthier to work in or live if it's residential construction, but also they often are less expensive to build and the time to build is less. So we see contractors wanting to use more wood in a commercial context. And last but not least, more wood buildings, you see more LEED verified wood buildings and a LEED verified building, then you can get higher rents from. So the owners and operators of those buildings certainly appreciate that. So more building permits year after year for tall wood building construction. And then last, you know, we haven't talked a lot about carbon offsets, but that is quite an exciting market. And there is more demand for carbon offsets today than there has been, you know, over time historically. And primarily carbon offsets that are generated from a nature-based solution, such as a forest. I can create a carbon offset, for example, by capping a landfill. And I've trapped the methane in that landfill. And so I can create a carbon offset and sell that into the market. And that's good. But, you know, to have a forest with all its flora and fauna and biodiversity, and I have a carbon offset from that forest, that sells at a much higher value than that methane trapped carbon asset. So we see a really exciting market just coming into fruition in the carbon offset space.
Really interesting. Well, listen, I have learned so much about forestry in just this very short period of time. So I really appreciate this, Angela, and thank you so much for joining us here on Alternative Realities.
Thank you for having me.
This material is for information purposes only. The views, opinions, and statements of financial market trends that are based on current market conditions are those of the speaker and may differ from those expressed by J.P. Morgan Asset Management or by other areas of J.P. Morgan Chase & Company. Any companies referenced are shown for illustrative purposes only and are not intended as a recommendation. We believe the information provided here is reliable, but should not be assumed to be accurate or complete. The views and strategies described may not be suitable for all investors. This content is intended for information only based on assumptions and current market conditions and are subject to change. No warranty of accuracy is given. This content does not contain sufficient information to support investment decisions. It is not to be construed as research, legal, regulatory, tax, accounting, or investment advice. Investments involve risks. Investors should seek professional advice or make an independent evaluation before investing. The value of investments and the income from them may fluctuate, including loss of capital. Past performance and yield are not indicative of current or future results. Forecasts and estimates may or may not come to pass. J.P. Morgan Asset Management is the asset management business of J.P. Morgan Chase & Company and its affiliates worldwide.